That third Saturday in October involving two of our border states.
Yeah. Talk dirty to me. Talk dirty to me, man.
I guess the Seattle Seahawks are taking applications for cornerbacks, if that's what you're...
And apparently right tackle.
Right tackle, yep.
It's Stone Forsythe.
Stone Forsythe,
who's filling in.
Out.
What a great name.
Stone Forsythe is filling in for, like, Abe Lucas. Yep. Or no, George Fant, who's filling in for, like, Abe Lucas. So maybe that'll lead to a sack, Rob.
maybe
a sack full. Maybe it'll be a Crystals party at the Benz on Sunday.
That mini buy didn't do much for them, though, you know, I guess, apparently. That's football, gentlemen. Man, what a weekend. They've got Porch Fest tomorrow in Oakhurst.
I was hoping you wouldn't bring it up because I saw that it was coming, and I was like, I'm going to ask Rob about it.
Is that the thing you talked about last year where your mother-in-law took the kids, Mike?
Yes.
Where you walk around and people have parties on their porch?
Yep.
It's like 125 bands throughout the whole neighborhood.
I got the number, man. It's more than that. It's more than that.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I was reading it, and I thought, okay, Rob's going to be here Friday. I can't wait to throw this at him in fair foul. But it's like 160-something.
Yep.
160-something. It's crazy, man.
A buddy of mine from MGA, my buddy Dylan, was telling me that they tried to get Corey Smith to play their wedding. And, you know, Corey Smith, the old guy at UGA.
Yeah.
And it was like this astronomical number. So then they tried to get Yacht Rock to play his wedding.
I bet that's probably even more.
It was less, but it was like only 30,000 less, and it was still about 30,000 too much.
Yeah. Yep.
So they got like the Yacht Rock
review,
which is like the fill in, like the and
it's
he's
like Diet Rock, Yacht Rock.
Yeah. And then he told me, he's like, dude, the number was so, he's like, it was something we could do. He goes, but we got lucky because the regular Yacht Rock, like half the members were like, they were just had nothing to do. And so they filled in with review. And so we got like half of Yacht Rock for the Yacht Rock review price for our wedding.
Wow.
And I was like, dude, that's a pretty cool. I just triggered because all these bands that are going to be playing this weekend.
And one of the Yacht Rock guys, lead singer, lives over there in Oakhurst.
Oh, so he'll probably be doing something, right?
I don't know. They might be on the
enough,
road.
Yeah. Corey Smith was our first dance at my wedding. That's
an interesting tidbit.
It was her choice, man. She liked the song. And of course, the song is called First Dance. So she was like, this is slam dunk for
Ours
me.
Was a U2 song.
It's amazing when a cover band can sell out Chastain Park like a
dude. I've been there. Everybody rolls up with their tablecloths and their cheese trays and their wine and their flower centerpieces.
A lot of artists hate that about Chastain with the eating and the wine. They would rather be more like a mosh pit.
It's a vibe. It's definitely a vibe up there at Chastain.
Yeah.
And honestly, I'm not a big Yacht Rock guy, but when I went, I was invited. Me and my wife were invited to go hang out there and watch them one night, and I was blown away by the scene of everybody just like. I mean, it wasn't like, you know, people are sitting around a table having a beer. I mean, it was straight up tablecloths. Like, I couldn't believe what I was looking at, man.
Yeah, it's a different crowd.
Bunch of divorced 40-year-old women on the crowd.
That too.
There was not that at Willie Nelson when I saw him at Chastain.
That's an interesting one.
Yeah.
Well, we're burying the lead. Me and Bo are going to a concert tonight at Ameris up in Alpharetta.
Who's playing tonight?
We're going to Whiskey Myers.
Oh, I've heard of Whiskey Myers.
Yeah. You would like Whiskey Myers. It's a southern rock kind of feel.
They have a rock and roll overtones to country is what you're saying.
You know, know where I discovered Whiskey Myers? Not discovered. You know where I first heard Whiskey Myers that made me kind of look them up and realize how much I knew their songs was they were on Yellowstone.
Them and Blackberry Smoke are a lot.
Yellowstone a
Atlanta,
lot.
Yeah, I'm a big Blackberry Smoke guy, and that's how actually Mike turned me on to Whiskey Myers because I said I like Blackberry Smoke, and he goes, "You'll love Whiskey Myers. I've never heard of him." He goes, "Here," and then
good stuff.
Yeah, and it is. You go back and rewatch Yellowstone after you've heard.
Yes,
like,
exactly.
That's one of the things that I was watching Yellowstone. I was like, "Hey, I know that. That's Blackberry Smoke." And then I went back, and after I had discovered Whiskey Myers, you know, they have always do the every holiday, the Paramount Channel does like Yellowstone.
Yep.
Just marathons. And then I heard, to your point, Whiskey Myers.
Mm-hmm. There it is, man. But you're right, Rob. A packed weekend. Don't forget, and I know people just heard it on the commercial, I'll be at Dudley's in Lithonia tomorrow night, 5-7, I'll be watching the Bama game.
Not you venturing over to DeKalb County.
Yeah, man, I just spread my wings. I'm just flapping them, getting over there. But like I said, I'll be watching the Alabama-Tennessee game, and I'll be pre-gaming for the Georgia-Texas game. So I'll be over there from 5-7. That'll be a lot of fun. Dos Equis tailgate party. Get it hooked up, man. Come see
me. I haven't
me.
Heard of that place, Dudley's, over there. I guess it's a pretty good
I've
spot
never
there,
been. I've been promised that it's a good time. I've never been, but I've been promised that it's a
well,
good time.
Well, you make it a good time is what
but that's what I'm bringing all the vibes. And I will have my Crimson on and maybe a cigar in the car. I don't know. I don't want to promise anything.
Well, Falcons have a chance to, what, three-game winning streak for the first time since 2019.
And that was one, that was kind of, I think, if I'm not mistaken, that was somewhat meaningless
four, my
one.
Bad, four, my bad, four, yep, foe.
That was a meaningless one at the end of the season.
Yep.
And this one, I mean, you know, if you don't take care of business throughout the rest of the season, people will say it was meaningless as well. But, dude, it's been fun. It's been very cardiac kid-like until last week.
Yeah. Finally, a relaxing, more leisurely victory for the Falcons, certainly. But, man, more importantly, though, the demise of the Saints. Who was that pundit this week that says?
Tim Hasselbeck.
Yeah, New Orleans, the best team in the NFC South.
Yeah, once they get through the injuries, they're going to come back and prove that. No, I think they're a Super Bowl-type team. And I'm like, I hate to break it to you, but it's getting worse for them.
Well, you know what's funny about that is I actually respect him for throwing that opinion out. I completely disagree with it. I think he's lost his freaking mind. But nonetheless, at least he's throwing it out there and like
you respect people that announce to the world that they're idiots. Is that what you're saying?
I respect people that announce to the world and speak their truth. Because I think you and I can both, all three of us can both confirm that some people think we're idiots for what we say too.
You know, I've always heard that phrase, my truth. There's only one truth. that's an opinion.
This goes back to when you're telling a story. There's three versions, right? It's your version, my version, and the actual truth. I just think that his version is that the Saints are one of the best teams in NFC South when healthy. My question to him would be, when are they going to be healthy?
Well,
because there's so many injuries at this point you can't even count.
I think honestly, Tampa Bay, you could probably say.
I think Tampa Bay is right now as currently constituted
is when healthy.
Yep.
On paper, I would put them over New Orleans all day long. I think they have a better quarterback. I think they have better receivers.
To your point, he said Tampa and New Orleans are the best teams in the division.
But he said overall he went with New Orleans.
I don't think so.
I think he just said
Tampa and New Orleans are the best teams in the division.
My understanding was he just said
New Orleans.
New Orleans.
Yeah. We'll have to run it back. Because I remember thinking the same thing you did, and I go, okay, well, he covered his butt by saying Tampa too.
But I also think on paper we look pretty damn good healthy.
Yeah, I agree. Can we talk about that for a minute? Because we talk so much about guys playing in preseason and keeping guys healthy. And you have to give Raheem credit right now. Whatever he's doing, knock on wood, seems to be working because we have had some good luck in that department.
Well, but we've never been healthy. We haven't been healthy all year because we started the season with
anybody.
Nobody's healthy.
You started this. You literally came into week one with Nate Landman being questionable for game one.
Right.
And he played through some injury and not the entire game. And then he was out. And last week was the first week you had him. And then you had Troy Anderson down for the last 2 weeks. So to me, the moment you get if you can get Nate Landman and Troy Anderson on the field at the same time with Caden Ellis, I think then it unlocks some of the things you want to do in the pass rush attack with Caden Ellis.
I completely agree. But here's what I'll say. I mean, we go into Pittsburgh week one. They had just lost their center for the year. They had just they lost a couple. Who's like we've had some luck in that department. And I'm trying to give credit to Raheem Morris and company because I think that is something that they've been doing. I mean, I'm looking at the injury report the last couple of days. Bijan doesn't really, he's not a full participant in practice, and he needs some rest.
But when guys get banged up, it's important, right? How
100%.
Important is a coach to take it when if a guy's not feeling 100% or maybe even you know that the guy was a little taxed at the end of the game, say, we're going to give you Thursday off or Wednesday off.
It not only is it important, but I think it speaks to what they see in Bijan and his work ethic. Because I think if you know that a guy is not going to give you 110 when they're actually practicing, it becomes harder to give them a day off, right? Because you're like, yeah, you know, if you're only going to give me 75% on days you are suited up, then I'm not going to give you the day before that off because I know you need that work. But I think they think Bijan works hard enough, and obviously Raheem sees something. He's comfortable saying, hey, let's take this one down.
I think you can see that in the way he blocks.
Oh,
dude, takes a lot of pride in blocking.
Don't even get me started, man. Don't even get me started in here. Him and Drake London both, I cannot tell you how impressed I have been with both of them blocking. It has been unbelievable. Some guys tend to opt out a little bit. Some guys make business decisions. Those two guys right there, those are like extra offensive linemen. It's beautiful.
All right, come back. More on the Falcons. Seattle, of course, all banged up in spite of their mini bye. Falcons looking for their first four-game winning streak since 2019. And not to mention, a banner day of college football. The hype surrounding that particular get-together in Austin is off the charts, and I'm all here for it. I just got to stay sober tomorrow so I can enjoy the game and comprehend it.
Sports
Fest. I'd like to be able to remember the game as I'm watching it. It's the Morning Shift Sports Radio, 99 game.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm, one of the proud sponsors of the 6 o'clock hour, the Morning Shift. Welcome back on this Friday. Massive, massive, massive weekend coming up, of course, tomorrow night in Austin, Georgia. An underdog for the first time in 50 games. We're going to get into all of that. Georgia Tech hosting Notre Dame. Haynes King status unclear. I don't think he's going to play, but.
Did you see that phone call for his radio show yesterday? They were asking Brent Key, one of the students, was stood up and was like, "Hey, is Haynes King going to play tomorrow?" And he goes, "Well, no, he's not, unfortunately, because tomorrow's Friday." Like, everybody's hanging on his every word. Like, Brent's like, "No, unfortunately, he's not. But tomorrow's Friday, so no, he will not be playing." And I'm like, "Oh!"
Brinkey's kind of a different dude in a way. Kind of that, he has that George O'Leary intensity about him, too, and just kind of a different way of thinking, different way of interacting with the media.
He dropped the Metallica. Some Metallica stuff.
Did
he really?
Yeah, and
big Metallica guy.
He's a Metallica guy, and he was like, they asked him about Mercedes Benz, and in his presser, I think it was Monday, and he was like, "Yeah, he's like, obviously it's a great venue." He dropped a few lines. He's like, "They have a big concert coming in June." And then he goes, "Darkness imprisoning me, all that I see, absolute horror." And he just kept going, and he obviously he's quoting from one, which is funny.
He's wonderfully weird, I think.
Yeah, well, it's a quirky. It's an offensive lineman, right? So we know there's a little bit of weirdness there already. Hey, Mike. But it's a quirkiness, but it's like he's kind of guy that keeps you on your toes because
you don't know what he's gonna say next, actually.
And you don't know when it's like real, like you being kind of like coming at you, or is he messing with you? And I would say it's fair to say that most of the time it's kind of like a jokingness, but there's going to be a moment when he's not, and it's going to bite someone because they're going to push too far, and he's going to be like,
"Ball.
No, man.
He knows the deal. Run the ball.
Run.
He knows the feels,
dude. You how much reading your feels last week watching?
Watching Bama, South Carolina.
Watching Falcons running the ball.
Oh, yeah. I thought you were saying, like, because I was in a panic mode because of Bama, South Carolina. Watching the Falcons run the ball, it's a beautiful thing. There was just a couple of, when we touched on it yesterday a little bit, day before, there's just a couple of small, intricate details that are just starting to grow. You know what I mean? So some of the run game schemes are starting to grow roots. And when that happens, and you know that you can be successful with one thing.
Oh, I thought you meant something trending in a bad direction.
No, no.
I was like, what?
No,
I
looked like, I mean, like, you know, you plant the seed on something, you run, whatever. And then when that works, you're like, well, you know, we could do this with a lead blocker. Well, we could do this with a counter. Well, you know what? Let's add in a motion to this. And then all of a sudden there's five different branches coming off that tree, Rob. And then all of a sudden it's like, uh-oh.
Dude.
Uh-oh, watch out. Watch out.
He could barely sit down when he was talking about inside zone and mid zone.
Just taking his shirt off and hyper turned on.
A little hot in here.
It was I was afraid we were going to have an HR meeting afterwards. But
Sandy walked in here afterwards. She goes, "Why are the windows foggy?" I was like, "I've been breathing heavy. Sorry."
I'm going to tell you something. This could be the shortest game in NFL history if both teams came in and tried to do what both defenses have problems stopping.
Yeah.
And that is the run
Seattle's
game.
Well, Seattle's, what, 26th and, what, 140
They're
yards a game?
27th, allowing 144.
Yep.
And you're like 20, I think we're 25th.
Yep. Yeah.
Allowing 142.
Well, let me give you the stat, though, that kind of puts a halt to that. The shortest game, the Seahawks have the highest drop back rate in the NFL. And Geno Smith leading the league, obviously, then in dropbacks per game at 46.2. 46.2 dropbacks per game. I said, as a lineman, a lot of times when you get into a game like Kirk had against the Bucks, where he's throwing the ball 58 times, actually had like over 60 dropbacks because a couple of sacks, that's like a nightmare game plan for some linemen. You do not want to be like, you do not want to pass block that many times. I can't even imagine living in a scheme where that's you know what you're dealing with, 50, you know, throwing the ball 50 plus times like Geno Smith does.
Well,
you're just living in it.
He only has 44 more attempts in the same amount of games than Kirk Cousins.
Well, it's like you want to throw when you have to, when you want to, not when you have to.
Exactly. Well, and not only that, I mean, I think that there's a, you know, and we talk about take what the defense gives you and check down when you need to and kind of read what's in front of you. But to your point, when you can run the ball effectively on first and second, and then it alleviates a lot of the stress in the passing game on those downs where you want to throw it. So it just, it all kind of coincides where it's not like a, you know, you're not running a 15-yard comeback along the sideline on third down. Maybe it's just a check down. The back just needs to get 4 or 5 yards. I mean, it just is what it is.
That's been the beauty of the Falcons' offense. To your point, Rob, is that you've been able to kind of do whatever's been effective in that game. Like you haven't been in moments where you have to throw constantly or run. You know, I think against Tampa Bay, they did a good job of taking away the run, but you were able to throw it effectively. Last week, I think Kirk was a little off early in that game. I don't think there was something that felt off. Like I don't know if it was the chemistry or maybe he wasn't, or is there something the defense was doing that
just that intangible human element too, where things are just off for whatever reason.
Yeah, and so you were able to go, well, I've got 7, and I've got 25, and I've got a good offensive line for run blocking. Let's let the run game eat, and it ate a lot, and it was to the tune of 200 yards. Yeah. Which is really good.
Buffet, son.
And that the greatest thing in the thing that no one is talking about Sunday's game against the Panthers was it was 28-20. They're starting to run the ball. They decide to throw. AJ makes a pick, and you literally just start handing the ball off, and you threw the ball 2 times in a game-sealing drive in that 4-minute offense, if you want to so to speak, with like 12 minutes to go. And you ran the – I think you got the clock down to like 5 or 6 minutes on that drive, and you scored a touchdown, and you primarily did it on the run game on the ground.
And not only that, to me, when you look at the ground game, and I don't want to get steamy in here again. I don't want to get too deep in the weeds.
Here we go.
But it's the progression of the ground game that makes you so excited. When you go to the game, it's wide zone, wide zone, wide zone, like a mid-zone wrap kind of play that we talked about where Charlie Warner's leading up through the hole. And then the counter play later in the game off of that, where all of a sudden you're taking mid-zone footwork, and then you're countering back and getting the handoff on the opposite side of the quarterback. It just seems like to me, and you had the passing explosion 2 weeks ago against Tampa. Yeah, the run game exploded last week. It just seems like there's a progression now to where you can start to see a little bit of a pattern start to develop. And hopefully they can continue that this weekend, Rob.
Well, Chuba Hubbard was just running at will against, and they had, what, 2 backup offensive linemen, and they're running, and all of a sudden they get cute and decide to throw the ball, and that's when AJ Terrell picks it off. It's like, what do you do? Why do they do that?
I said it to Goforth in the office. I said, Goforth, one of these teams is about to throw the ball, and they will have messed up.
And that offensive line is still decent. They went added a lot of pieces, and I'm talking about the Carolinas. Look, when you have backups, though, in there in an offensive line, there's nothing that fits it better than a good running back like Chuba Hubbard, where you can lean because it's an ultimate equalizer. To me, though, a key for Sunday for the Falcons is if they can effectively run the ball and keep and make possessions expand a little bit, right? Maybe have a 10 to 12 play drive that takes 6 to 7 minutes of game time off the game clock off the the off the board, score a touchdown, and then turn around and are able to force Seattle in a 3 or maybe 6 and out and get the ball back and start leaning again, because what you're doing is you're wearing the defense down, you're keeping their offense out of rhythm, and you're also forcing their hand to throw at that point if you can put points on the board. And maybe now you can come after the fourth right tackle they might have in the game.
Yeah, and I'll be curious to see what exactly our secondary's plan is. I know we've talked about it a ton with the cover three and everything else, and we run it at a pretty good clip, top five in the league in terms of the amount of cover three we run. But I'll tell you this about Geno Smith, and this has me scratching my head, kind of still asking questions, and I've tried to kind of zero in when you watch film. First of all, we talked about it yesterday. Bo and I talked about it this morning. 11 targets for DK Metcalf last week with 3 catches. I mean, that's crazy. But then I went deeper in the numbers about some of Geno's numbers. We mentioned 6 touchdowns, 6 interceptions. He's yet to have a game this year. He leads the league in dropback rate and the amount of passes he's throwing. He's yet to have a game with multiple touchdown passes. Like, he's only got one.
How about the fact the Falcons have been pretty good, except, say, last game against Mike Evans? They've been good about dealing, neutralizing as such a big physical receiver. They can apply that knowledge to going up against the DK Metcalf. I
mean, yeah.
That's what I'm thinking.
Walk up. And Raheem talked about A.J. Terrell matching up with DK and how he's looking forward to that. And A.J. kind of...
because he's used to Mike Evans.
Right, exactly. And DK obviously is his own beast, and everybody kind of sees the film last week, Rob, of him grabbing the headset, talking to the offensive coordinator and everything else going on. It doesn't sound like the relationship between him and Geno is great right now. Mm-hmm. We don't want this Sunday to be a coming together where Geno and DK are hugging afterwards. You know what I mean? Like, let's make sure that we keep that relationship a little disruptive, if you will.
As much as people get upset with the lack of pass rush and everything, the Falcons are, I think, first in yards per completion in the NFL at like 8.6 allowed, which is pretty good, but it's also the way they've played playing off. Also, can we stop blaming a defensive back in the same part of the field for a completion? Because you don't like every time a guy makes a catch and A.J. Terrell's in the vicinity, they're like, oh, it's the A.J. Terrell! And it's like, dude, he has played pretty well this year. I think we look at how well Mike Hughes has played as well, but our outside corners have been pretty stout, especially with their open field tackling, which has limited some of that yards per catch. But I agree with what Mike said. Let's not let DK Metcalf and Geno Smith let's not be their
kumbaya.
We don't need to be their
their catharsis, their breakthrough.
Yeah, this isn't marriage counseling, all right? And we don't need to be the counselor and make it right for them.
I don't want to be Dr. Phil, all right?
How about this? On first down, let's run for an average of 7 yards and just open up the playbook and just...
You sound like a big choo-choo train.
I mean, who would not take that?
The Falcons go 5-2. They're really going to start raise some eyebrows across the country, which would be a wonderful, wonderful thing.
But the Saints would still be better at 2-5, according to some.
33-10 Saints lose last night to their former head coach, Sean Payton, as well. But coming up next, something that hasn't happened in 50 games for the University of Georgia. And, well, they might as well not even go to Austin. Just don't even go. There's no chance, no shot whatsoever. It's coming up next on the Morning Shift, Sports Radio 99 The Game. Sorry, brought to you by Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. Georgia, Texas, 7:30 tomorrow night in Austin. Not a lot of history between these two teams. Last time, Georgia and Austin, 1958. Fran Tarkington was Georgia's quarterback. They lost that day.
You remember that game, right?
I remember. The one I remember the most was January 2nd, 1984, the Cotton Bowl. Georgia wins that one. That was That was like Vince Dooley's last signature victory, because the 4 or 5 years after that, very mediocre. They retired in 1988. But I remember that vividly, January 2nd, 84, John Lastinger. They basically took a national championship away from Texas that particular day. Texas came in ranked number 2, I believe, John Lastinger with what, the 20-yard TD run to seal it, 10-9. Very cold day in the Cotton Bowl that year. I remember that winter here, actually, in 1980, it was very cold here.
Yeah.
Yep.
I was one.
You were one.
No, I wasn't even one.
I was
one.
In high school. So
I mean, I was probably 6 months in that winter.
And then, of course, Bevo almost impaling Uga.
Yeah, in the Sugar Bowl. I've never liked Texas football program because I've always felt like they felt they were better than everyone else. They kind of have that elitist attitude. The Longhorn Network.
Sense of entitlement is what you're saying?
Yeah, very much so.
Well, that's a well-heeled, very wealthy alumni base, though.
Yeah. So is A&M, and they think they're Texas, but they're not even close.
Man, you're just running the gauntlet right now. Yeah, trying to stoke the fires.
You want me to?
Anybody else you want to fight with?
You want me to talk about Texas Tech? I can go through the whole state if you want.
I mean, sheesh, UTEP's just out there trying to live their life.
I have no problem with
you. Got an axe to grind with Stephen F. Austin State.
I was going to say, what's the incarnate word over there?
Well, SMU paid their way to try to be Texas, and that came crashing down. Actually, SMU's pretty.
I was going to say they ain't bad.
They're the toast of the ACC right
they ain't
now.
That ain't come crashing.
Winning on the road is what they've been doing.
But I do feel like Texas has been humble the last 10 years football wise. Since Alabama snuck by them in the national championship game in the Rose Bowl. They've been kind of humbled, and they finally maybe have gotten back to the point where they think they've got the right coach. They've got a ton of talent. I mean, I think in the trenches, this Texas team is more talented than Georgia.
This is what Georgia was 2 years ago. Is what I'm thinking. 2-3 years ago, same sort of. And Georgia's issue is depth. Especially on defense.
It's hard to imagine a team that is top three in recruiting and eats in the transfer portal like they do has a depth issue.
But you can see with Georgia, every time a starter goes out of the game for a rest or they're injured, you can see it's a tangible, you can just see it. There's a drop-off.
And you didn't see that in 21. You didn't see that in 22.
Well, to me, that's a portal thing. Yep. I think it's absolutely a portal thing. And I think that to your point about Texas being Georgia 2 years ago, 3 years ago, the one thing that has happened in college football is more so than any position, I feel like we've seen a realignment. Of course, the quarterback is its own kind of beast, but we've seen a realignment in terms of strength along defensive lines because of the portal. Like Florida State last year, the defensive line they had, unbelievable portal guys. Ole Miss went out and got portal guys. Texas has timed it so well to where they have been now built like an SEC team through the portal a little bit, but also bringing guys along. They are built like an SEC team now, and they're in the SEC. Like, they have a great offensive line, and they have a good defensive line. And that's how they go about their business right now.
Georgia's not been an underdog in 50 games. You know Kirby's been preaching that this week, right?
Nobody's giving you
a chance to win. We might as well not even. What did Saban do when you guys – you weren't underdogs very often, but when you were –
Listen, let me just take you on a stroll back down memory lane in my career. I redshirted my freshman year under Mike Shula. We were underdogs a lot, plenty, which we needed to be. But my first year when I redshirted, we went 10-2, won the Cotton Bowl, the whole bit. All right. So then Saban's hired my redshirt sophomore year, my third year. All right. And we come out and we're like, all right, I think we started like 6-2, right? Lost to Florida State and Jacksonville. That was a bad one. Beat Tennessee, who won the East that year. We're off and running. We got a bunch of suspensions, and we lose to Monroe, lose to Mississippi State. But to your point, we opened the 08 season as a massive underdog against a top 10 Clemson team right down the street in the Georgia Dome. Mm-hmm. And I think we were like 23 or 24. And that was nobody believes in you. You lose all these games last year. Posters of Mississippi State loss, posters of the Louisiana Monroe loss, plastered everywhere. Hey, people think you suck. Are you going to go out and prove them wrong? Yeah, I think I will.
Did you play in that Monroe game?
Yes, I did.
What happened? I'm not trying to bring up bad memories.
I just think it's interesting to happen.
Like, what's your mindset in a game like that midway through where you realize they're not going away?
So, a lot of things happened in that game. I think that's that house. And don't get me wrong. Like, a lot of times when games like that happen, it's a team that operates at a high level against a team with more talent that doesn't operate at a high level. I don't even think they operated at a high level. Like, we played the sloppiest game of football you can possibly imagine. Our quarterback throws a pick six early in the game. I think they were already up 7-0. Might have made it 14-0. We scratch and claw, get a touchdown. I think we might even have tied it at some point. And then, like, every time we're, like, trying to scratch and claw to get back into it, it was like a pick, a fumble, something bad would happen. That just didn't allow it to happen. And also, man, and I know this gets overblown a little bit in some people's eyes because you look at the talent as opposed to other things. We really didn't still understand what exactly our scheme was offensively. Major Applewhite was our offensive coordinator. We were running a little bit of inside zone. I had to play right guard that day because we had some suspensions along the offensive line for a textbook scandal that would make people laugh today's day and age. I mean, it's just like – we had six of our best players. Glenn Coffey was suspended. Antoine Caldwell, who was an All-American center, and it it just, there was so many different things pointed in different directions. There was just, it just fell apart. And the same thing happened against Mississippi State the following week. And it just, we couldn't ever get it pointed in the right direction. So if I could answer that with one thing, I would tell you, but it was just, it was a overcast, 11, you know, start, 11 a.m. Central start. And we just, man, we played like crap. And that's what happens in college football.
Yeah, okay. I'm glad you got to the last part because I was about to say a lot of excuses being made there.
I don't have any. That's the point of the whole talk. I don't have any excuses. We just played like crap.
And I hate to put you on the spot. And I'm not trying to be a jerk, but I just wanted to ask because I've always been interested in what happens when teams with a ton of talent in college football, where you know where most of the people feel that most of the time, and it's true that you can show up and just on talent alone pull it out. How it doesn't happen?
I just don't think that's the case anymore.
I don't either.
I really think that there has been a great reckoning in college football to where, first of all, coaches are moving faster than ever, right? I mean, it's just, hey, if you're a good coach, it's like boom, 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 boom. McKalen DeBoer's 2 years at Washington. 10 years ago, the guy's at Sioux Falls. You know what I mean? And it's like all of a sudden he's the head coach at Alabama. It just, you're moving quickly. The players are moving. A lot of equalization.
I think Tashard Choice can be a head coach within 2-3 years.
It's not a bad pick. Not a bad pick.
Very good running back. Good, great recruiter. Of course, went to Georgia Tech. He was all academic ACC while going to Georgia Tech. I know he probably majored in management, but he still got through the rigors of he was a good player.
Yeah.
Bounced around the NFL. Apparently a really good coach. I mean, ask Bijan about him, right?
What was the major that Rusty brought up yesterday they don't offer at Georgia anymore that's hurt? Was it criminal justice?
Yeah.
He was like, something like that. They don't offer criminal justice anymore. That one stings.
Yeah, are we done with that? Are we done with the Bo Morgan? Sophomore, sports management. Like, you know, when they always, remember that old school, you'd say your major? The player would say his major, and you're like,
What's funny is I went to school, I was like, major in business. And like, a year in school, I was like, nah. What am I talking about?
Physical Dylan education.
Dylan Matthews College? No college. All right, coming up, Raheem Morris announces he's going to ban fracking. It's coming up next in the morning shift, Sports Radio 99 The Game.
No, he's not.